The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
This girl, don't do this. She's a good girl, man. You know, now I'm going on a year. I don't sleep good. I'm angry at the world. And just because a friend turns 18 doesn't mean they're an adult.
Currently, and at any given time, there are around 90,000 active missing person cases in the United States. While systems are in place to immediately alert the public to keep a vigilant eye out for missing children through Amber Alerts and the elderly by way of Silver Alerts, adults who have vanished are most often considered to have left of their own free will, apparently rendering an equivalent warning system or program unnecessary. Most law enforcement agencies in the U.S. grant adult missing persons cases a relatively low priority. After all, it isn't a crime to disappear if you're an adult, or at least defined as an adult by meeting the standard of turning 18 years old. The legal definition of a missing person aged 18 or over in the United States specifies little more than the individual's disappearance is possibly not voluntary. The ambiguity of this official statement leaves much to be desired. Is a person considered to have left voluntarily if they indeed left on their own, but were coerced or manipulated into doing so? Though meeting a love interest on the internet through dating sites or social media platforms has become a norm in virtually all westernized societies, it remains somewhere in the top five of most parents' worst nightmares. Meeting someone online, particularly if you're not an especially social individual, might seem like a godsend, and advertisements for dating sites, both self-promoting and user testimonial, tout the practice as a cure-all for emptiness or loneliness. The dangers of children chatting with strangers online are first and foremost in the minds of most, but adults are vulnerable to online predators as well. Online platforms such as dating sites and social media seem ready-made for sexual predators and abusers of adults because behavior can be hidden or controlled through distance and candy-coated profiles. Essentially, they can be whoever they want to be, or whoever you want them to be. Criminal records can be concealed. First-hand experiences or warnings from those who might know the individual are concealed. Such predators often spend their time building their victims' trust, first making them feel special, maybe sending gifts or lavishing them with compliments, waiting for the opportune moment to make their move. Abusers and controllers often put their victims through a roller coaster of building them up and tearing them down, ultimately convincing the victim that they are unworthy of any other relationship, that they are damaged. The abuser manipulates them into thinking that they are the victim's only choice. Individuals suffering from depression or low self-esteem are especially good targets for abusers, of course. Nicole Irene Garcia was born July 26, 1998. She lived with her family in Haltom City, Texas, which is essentially a suburb of Fort Worth. Nicole kept to herself and was most often immersed in a book or drawing. By all accounts, she is extremely intelligent and incredibly family-oriented. Nicole's father, Raphael, describes her as an integral part of their family's dynamic.
Beautiful, hardworking. You know what I'm saying? She was always motivated into doing something to help the family. Always trying to learn new things. One of the first kids to graduate in our family. Anything she wanted, I would get it for her, even if I had to work overtime, double time. If she needed it, I got it because she earned it. Average teenage, you know, she was good. She's a sweetheart. But me and her were like spick and span. Me, her, and my other daughter, Sylvia, it was a little trio. Everywhere we went together. She sat in the front. She was my map. She was my guide. She would keep me awake. You know what I'm saying? That companion. She was a good kid, man. I don't know. I don't know how this happens.
Nicole was cautious about with whom she'd place her trust and unwavering loyalty in, according to a close friend, Valeria. Her love for her siblings was strong, her friend also told us.
Nicole is one of the most sweetest and temperamental people you'll ever meet. She's so unbearingly loyal. She loved reading. She loved reading. She was so smart. She's sweet. She's fiery. But there's like no one really I've ever known that's like her. She loves her sisters. One of her faults is that she cares more about others than she does herself. She was like a mother to Sylvia. But she definitely mothered the hell out of that girl. She loved Sylvia. She loved Sylvia so much.
In 2016, Nicole graduated from Haltom High. Not long after graduation, she began speaking with an older man online. It is thought that they met through an online dating service. The family was generally unaware that Nicole was spending so much time speaking with this man, and only her younger sister, Sylvia, also known as Felicia or Fifi, observed them as they chatted on FaceTime. It began to be apparent to her other sisters that something was going on with Nicole, though they weren't sure exactly what. Felicia and Jennifer, Nicole's second oldest sister, both began noticing Nicole becoming bothered or agitated by her correspondences with her new boyfriend.
Well, he's very overprotective, and it's like every single time they would be on the phone, they would argue. He's very, very jealous. One time, me and my brother and my sister were walking to the middle school to pick up my little sister, and she was on the phone with him, and me and my brother, you know, we weren't listening. We were just playing around. And she was yelling at us. And he hung up the phone because he needed attention. And he would always used to, like, yell at her a lot for that. Like, you don't show me enough attention. And he tells her, oh, you see your family all the time. You don't see me at all. We barely talk. And they used to argue about that a lot. Anytime she would get on the phone or start texting, her demeanor completely changed. And she would go from happy from what we were talking about to stuck into her phone, and her smile went away. And like, she was just right away mad. As soon as she would get off the phone, she'd be like, oh, leave me alone. And nobody could talk to her or anything. Or we'd be like, what's wrong? She'd be like, I don't want to talk about it. You know, I would look at Fifi, and she would be like, all right, I think it's her boyfriend. And I'd be like, oh, okay. You know, like, I didn't know what that was about. I just let her cool down or something. Maybe I was thinking maybe they got an argument. And then she was like, oh no, he's always like that. Like, there was a time that something about Nicole was supposed to go out with Michelle, which is, like, their stepmom. And I guess they were getting their hair and stuff done. And he called her, and he was cussing her out, talking about, you know, you're not going anywhere. I didn't tell you you can leave. What are you doing your hair for? And, you know, stuff like that. So he was already dictating, you know, her dress code, her hair. He was always calling, like, oh, well, who are you talking to? Are you on the phone? Are you on Facebook? What are you doing? And stuff like that. And she couldn't do anything. As soon as he called her, as soon as he said something, she was just mad and sad and just down. After we've seen kind of all these changes with her, she started getting really emotional.
Still, Nicole didn't discuss the relationship with her two older sisters or her parents, nor did she mention plans to leave the family's home. However, on December 23rd, 2016, Nicole did just that. At midnight, Nicole's mother, Sylvia, received a video message from Nicole.
Hey, Mom, Marcus, Martin, miss y'all, love y'all. Talk to y'all soon, probably tomorrow. You got me right when I was going to sleep, Mom, so I'm going to go to sleep. Good night, love y'all.
Hours later, still early, Nicole was seen by her grandmother, who also lived at the family's home.
This is what my mother told me, and my mother gets on her little transition bus that takes her to dialysis. She said Nicole was dressed real pretty, real nice. Helped her into the transition bus, the van, and gave her a kiss and said, "Hey, I love you, Grandma." But she thought that she was walking over here because she didn't see her. She took off. But she said she was dressed up. Her hair was nice and curly. She was ready to do her day. At 4 o'clock in the morning, that's not normal, you know?
The details of this encounter and the video, both perhaps goodbyes, wouldn't take the form of clues until other events took place. Nicole, Felicia, and Raphael were involved in an automobile accident a couple of years before, and installments were provided to Nicole through the law office that handled the case. Since the incident happened before Nicole was 18, her father, Raphael's signature, was required in order for the law offices to release the check. That morning, though, she attempted to pick up the check without her father present.
To call me, to actually call me and say, "Hey, your daughter's here," to pick up the check, and we told her we couldn't give it to her. She goes back out to the vehicle, not her and the guy arguing. I said, "What the guy looked like?" They said, "Well, we can't see him because of the bushes, but he looked like an older gentleman." I said, "Well, what's he driving?" They said, "It's like a gray car, short car with a black door." I said, "Well, put her on the side room and detain her there talking to her while I get up there. I don't play no far from Houghton City. It's almost an hour drive." But she got in the car and they were gone. And then I called the lawyer and I said, "Hey, hold the video." They said, "Well, we can't get to the video because the guy that owns the building is out of town until after the holidays." Called the police. The police tried to get in touch with the owner. Can't get in touch with him. Right after New Year's, the guy comes back. They go look at the video, and it's all recorded over.
The man seen arguing with Nicole at the attorney's office is presumed to be the same man she had been conversing with online. And to the best of the family's knowledge, the two had never met in person prior to this day. Upon receiving the call from the lawyer's office, Raphael assembled Nicole's other sisters to inspect her room, to search for any clues as to where and precisely with whom she'd left with.
The weird part is, after I called the police and everything, and the police said, "Oh, she's a runaway, this man," I hung up the phone, and I immediately said, "Hey, get the phone. The SIM's card was off of it. She just left it open on the bed like that." So I ran into my mother's side over there, and I looked at the caller ID, and it was erased. So everything was erased and everything. And when I went to the phone to look up like old pictures, nothing. The phone was reset.
A name was found on a notebook in Nicole's room, and little else but the SIM card from her phone was taken. Her social media profile was taken down.
She didn't take anything whatsoever that they noticed was missing, just the SIM card, and I think they found her wallet. And that was the only thing they could figure out that was missing. So we're going through the room, and I was going through all her stuff, trying to figure out something. And she had my phone number written down in one of her books. So I kind of feel like she was trying to get some of the numbers and memorize them. And after the video message from her to mom, her Facebook was shut down. There was nothing left. I don't know.
The entirety of Nicole's family feels like she is in danger and are desperate for answers, as she was constantly in contact with her family, particularly her sisters.
She was always like asking her friend, "Hey, let me use your phone real quick so I can call my dad or my sister." Or, you know, she would find a store phone wherever she was at, like, "Hey, I'm over here and doing this, doing that." And, you know, whoever she was at school with, she would get their phone and be like, "Hey, let me just call them." And she would talk to me with, you know, other people's phones and stuff. And, you know, she always kept in contact.
The argument Nicole had with the man at the lawyer's office was at least partially physical and undoubtedly coercive, her mother Sylvia says.
And from what my understanding is, she was talking to a guy named Jonathan Ochoa, and he probably found out about the money and manipulated her into going with him. From my understanding, the people from the lawyer's office said that they saw a girl out there that was arguing with this guy, and he kind of pushed her around.
Nicole also had issues with self-esteem, making her a prime target for an abusive manipulator. Jennifer explains what she thinks possibly happened to her sister.
From what I know, I feel like she's in an abusive relationship, and I feel like she's scared to leave. I feel like she wants to leave him, you know, maybe getting abused, right? Because if he had that much power over her to make, you know, one comment over the phone to him, oh, you're not going, don't do her. Because I remember Felicia said she was putting braids in Nicole's hair, and that he was like, no, don't let her do that. Get that stuff out of your head right now. Like, fix your hair. So it's like, if he had that much power, it's like, you know, it's going to be worse than that. You know, it's going to be physical. So, I mean, I just feel like, she thinks that that's what she's worth. I know she was dealing with a lot of low self-esteem issues.
Nicole's absence has left a hole in the lives of her entire family as they struggle with living their daily routines while searching for her, asking themselves the same questions over and over every single day. With no answers, there is no moving forward.
It really broke everything apart. Mom's always emotional and, you know, doesn't really want to be around her. But normally she'll drive out here, come see everybody, but it's like she's been off in her own little zone. She's starting to get really depressed, and we see it, and she's always crying. Like, every night she's going through something, and she'll call me, and she'll be like, I can't take it anymore. She'll wake up in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, and call me, Jenny, I can't take it anymore, and tell me these dreams she's having about Nicole and everything. And then, you know, it's like me and Jessica try to stay in contact, because we're the closest to each other, but, you know, we try to keep in contact, but it's like, oh, it's always, have you heard from Nicole? No. Have you? No. Oh, okay. And it's just kind of an awkward thing right there. And then with Dad and Felicia, it's, you know, they're always asking everybody to. And Dad's still going door to door, basically. And he's still going to stores and asking them, have you seen her? Did she come around? This and that. And he's going just as crazy as Mom. And it hit everybody separately really hard. I mean, nobody's as close as we used to be, and she really was. Me and Nicole were really like the glue of everything, and it's just hard to keep it all together by myself. It was whole, even though she may not have felt like that, but it was like she was the strong glue that held everybody together. I don't know how to explain it. It's just,
I don't went to every woman's shelter. I don't went to every kind of shelter here in Fort Worth and stayed out till like 3 o'clock in the morning to see if maybe I see her panhandling or something. This ain't her. You know what I'm saying? This ain't the way she lives. Nerve wracking is what it is. Like, everybody just searching is a never ending seek, you know, even when you see people down the street and you think it's her, you jerk yourself out of the way to pull around to see if it's her, and it's not. You know, big old disappointment that we can't find her. We sit around, usually she's there, now there's a missing spot. You know, you feel it's mixed emotions, because one minute you're like mad and then you're worried, both at the same time. Why don't you call? Why isn't she trying to call us? Why isn't she trying to reach us? You know what I'm saying? Or what happened if she can't? That's when the anger kicks in. It's back and forth, and the family is just, they're trying not to get their eyes watered, because it's like this all day. If anybody mentions her, it's like a, you know, that's how it's been. I mean, me and my daughter Felicia, we drive around and we pass old spots where Nicole would be with us, and it's like she'll look down at her phone. She won't even look up. It's just different, you know, without her being around. That's how it is. Usually they both go to their mother's house and go babysit and come back. Things are happy now. Everything's just slow. Everything's in slow motion. Everything is even hard to breathe, you know? Every night before you go to bed, you say, oh, let me check one more time. Let me check here. Maybe I missed this spot. There's no ending. So we're hurt, and the family knows we're hurt. We look at each other, we know we're hurt. And we won't stop.
If by chance Nicole is listening, or if someone is listening who knows how to contact her, the family wishes to extend the following messages.
Whatever she's going through, she doesn't have to go through that. If she's happy, great. Just send us a message or something, or even something simple on Facebook, make a fake account, whatever. Do something just to say, hey, this is Nicole, I'm okay. But if you're in a, like, if she's in a bad situation, she can always get out. She can always call mom, call dad, call me. I'll come get her. I'll stop everything that I'm doing, and I will drive wherever I need to go get her. She doesn't have to go through whatever she's going through if it's bad. She always has somewhere to go, and that's at my house. If she doesn't want to go back to dad, she can always come to my house. I'll take care of her. I won't make her have to do anything as long as I know she is okay and she'll be home. I just wanted to come home and be safe. I don't want her to feel like she's stuck anywhere.
Whatever her reason was for running away or just not calling us, we love her. We understand. Just call us. Just give me a text saying that she's okay. I just want to hear her voice. Just give me a call. I just want to hear her voice. If she doesn't want to come home, it's understandable. She wants to make her life. I just want to hear her voice. I just want her to say, I'm okay. I just need time for myself. We love her. Just I sent out a message for Nicole saying that Marcus says, you know, that he loves her and he just wants her to call mom just to so mom knows that you're okay. Just let her know that Marcus said that he loves her and he misses her and just call.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot to say. I love her. I love her. And Nicole, if you're listening to this, I love you. Come home. Love you. I love her. Let her come home. She's here. She can come here. She's here always. Always allowed in this house. She can come home.
Nicole Garcia stands 5'6" tall and weighed 210 pounds at the time of her disappearance. She is Hispanic with brown hair and brown eyes. One of her ears is pierced at the top cartilage. Nicole has a small gray spot on her front tooth. She would be 19 years old today. The man she is thought to be with, Jonathan Ochoa, a Hispanic male, approximately 25 to 30 years old, with black hair and no facial hair. He is thought to stand 5'10" to 6 feet tall, weighing approximately 230 to 290 pounds. He is reported by Nicole's sister, Felicia, as resembling the Incredible Hulk because of his square head and jaw and large build. Ochoa is thought to have resided in Houston or Austin, Texas. He is potentially dangerous. If you have any information as to the whereabouts of Nicole Irene Garcia, please contact the Plano Police at 972-941-2444 or the Bring Our Missing Home tip line at 810-294-4858. Tips can be left anonymously. Please visit Where is Nicole Garcia on Facebook to share flyers and raise awareness so that the family can find their beloved daughter and sister. Next time on Gone Cold Podcast, we'll be revisiting Carla Walker's case to discuss a few documents we've acquired with Darren Dake, veteran criminal investigator and host of the podcast Coroner Talk. If you haven't already, please go back and listen to the first 7 episodes to familiarize yourself with the case. Thank you to Bring Our Missing Home for connecting us with Nicole's family. You can visit their website at bringourmissinghome.org or find them on Twitter by using @BOMH_UIS and Facebook by searching Bring Our Missing Home. We'd like to say thank you to Valeria for her contribution to this episode. And of course, a huge thank you to Nicole's family for sharing their story. If you would like to support the show, you can do so by subscribing, leaving us a review on iTunes, sharing Nicole's story with friends, or stopping by our Patreon page and making a small donation. You can subscribe to Gone Cold Podcast on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Auto Radio, Stitcher, Google Play, or your favorite podcast app. We can be contacted on Facebook or Twitter by using @GoneColdPodcast. We have a closed Facebook discussion group where we exchange ideas about the cases we cover and others. We also post pictures, and our good friends there often post interesting and pertinent articles ranging from unsolved cases to forensic technological advances. So please join in. Also, if true crime is your thing, please check out thetruecrimefiles.com. There you can read about many cases, and it's always compassionately and respectfully well presented, and the insight is always top notch. Visit thetruecrimefiles.com. You'll be glad you did. And finally, we present a promo from our friends and fellow Fort Worthians, Shay and Aaron. Their podcast is called All Crime, No Cattle. We think you'll enjoy it as much as we do. Thanks for listening, y'all.
Do you like true crime? Do you like Texas? Then you should check out our podcast, All Crime, No Cattle, which focuses on true crime stories from the Lone Star State. I'm Shay.
And I'm Aaron. We're a conversational podcast, meaning we like to joke around, but we also strive to bring you a balanced and well-researched story.
We do the research, so you don't have to.
We end every episode with a good news story, just to remind everyone that real life isn't quite as depressing as true crime can make it out to be.
New episodes drop every Wednesday, and you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All Crime, No Cattle, because crime is bigger in Texas, y'all.
Yeehaw!
Oh, lady.